Well, what I want to talk about today is how the Earth is getting greener. It's a subject I've got interested in the last few weeks and months. There's some really interesting new research on how, quite literally, the planet is getting greener as we speak. And there are reasons why that's happening. And it's not in spite of the technological growth and economic development that we're experiencing. It's because of it. And that's what I think is so interesting about it. About 20 years ago, a man named Charles Keeling, who discovered the increase in carbon dioxide in the atmosphere, or at least he measured the increase in carbon dioxide in the atmosphere for the first time, he noticed something about 20 years ago, which was that the amplitude of change of the carbon dioxide graph was increasing. In other words, in the northern summer, the carbon dioxide level fell, and when the winter it went up again, and this change was growing. So not only was more carbon dioxide coming into the atmosphere every winter, more was going out of it every summer. And he was a bit puzzled by that. You can understand why more's coming into the atmosphere because of industry and so on, but why is more going out of it every summer as well? You know, why is it going up and down more? And the answer he came up with is there's probably more green vegetation on the planet. And everyone said, don't be ridiculous, the Earth's being devastated by human activity, so there's less green vegetation. Well, we now have the data. There's a satellite which goes around the Earth and it measures the amount of greenery beneath it as it does so, and it comes up with something called the normalized difference vegetation index, which is a measure of how green the land area of the planet is. And it's quite clear that for the last 30 years it's been increasing. So between 1982 and 2011, 20.5% of the vegetated area of the planet got greener and 3% got browner. So net, there is an increase in greenness all over the planet. Now, to start with, people thought, well, that's just farming. You know, we're farming, we're using fertilizer and irrigation, so we're making things greener. But then they looked at it in more detail and said, well, no, it's not just in the farmland areas, it's also in forests. Well, maybe it's because northern forests are getting greener because the Earth's getting a little bit warmer, and so Canada and Siberia, yeah, sure, the forests are growing a little bit faster there too. And then they thought, well, maybe it's also nitrogen fertilizer, we're using more fertilizer. Well, that has a bit of an effect. But it turns out that some of the fastest greening is happening in places like the Amazon and the middle of Africa, where there's very little nitrogen fertilizer available, and where it's not because the climate's got warmer, because the climate's not changed much there, and it's anyway quite warm enough. It turns out that there is actually a net greening happening all over the world, places like the Amazon rainforest. So what people like Ranga Mineni of Boston University have done is they've drilled down into the detail of the actual pixels of the planet to try and work out what's going on. And they find that they can explain about half of it by increases in rainfall. Because the world is a little bit warmer, we've got more evaporation from the ocean, there's more moisture in the air, we get slightly heavier rainfall, so we tend to get a little more greening. So for example, the Sahel region in northern Africa, between the Sahara and the equator there, it has got considerably greener over the last 30 years. In contrast, by the way, to what was predicted when I was younger, which was that the Sahel was going to get drier and the Sahara was going to advance. There's been a considerable net greening of the Sahel. But the other half of the greening, Mineni concludes, and he hasn't published this yet, but he's talked about it in talks, the other half of that greening comes from carbon dioxide itself. In other words, the fact that we're putting more carbon dioxide into the air means there's more fuel to grow plants. And when a plant has more carbon dioxide in the air, it doesn't have to open its pores so much, so it doesn't lose so much water in absorbing the carbon dioxide that it needs to grow. And so there's tons of experiments now showing that plants grow faster if there's more carbon dioxide in the air. Roughly speaking, on average, for a 200 parts per million increase in carbon dioxide in the air, you get a 30% improvement in plant growth. That's experiments both in the field and in the laboratory. So it's really quite a remarkable phenomenon here. Because of the burning of fossil fuels, we're making the planet greener. It's an astonishing discovery, I think. I think it's rather amazing. And of course, it's an incredibly unwelcome discovery for the environmental movement. They don't want to hear this at all. And how is it possible? I mean, after all, weren't we supposed to be devastating the planet? The population has doubled in my lifetime. The population of the world has doubled. We're about 7 billion people. We were about 3.5 billion when I was born. It's not all my fault, but it has increased. And of course, during that time, instead of getting poor and miserable and hungry like we were told, actually we're getting considerably better fed and healthier. We're living 30% longer on average than when I was born. And we've got 25% more food per head than when I was born. So in other words, despite doubling the population, we've got more food to go around than we had when I was young. And yet the Earth is getting greener. This hasn't come at the expense of the ecosystem. So there's something wrong with the model that says that economic growth comes at the expense of resources, at the expense of the environment. It's certainly possible, at least until this point, to have an improving environment and an improving living standards and an increase in numbers of people. And when you think about it, it's pretty obvious what's going on to some degree. If you take, for example, food, we use 65% less land to produce the same amount of food as we did in 1960, 50 years ago. That's an accurate measure that's been done by Jesse Orzabal and Paul Wagoner and colleagues at Rockefeller University. They've taken all the different crops in the world and they've measured the changes in yield in different parts of the world and they've summed it all up, and the crop production index shows that you need about a third as much land to produce the same amount of food as you would have done 50 years ago. And that means, of course, that you don't need so much land, so you can spare a lot of the land. They actually calculate that we've now passed peak farmland. In other words, we're not going to need as much farmland from now on to feed a growing population of the world. We're actually going to cut the amount of farmland we had. Or rather, we would be able to cut that number if it wasn't for the biofuels program. I'll come back to that in a minute, but that's the spanner in the works. And they reached that conclusion despite making very conservative assumptions about the rate of population growth, about the rate at which people will take up meat eating in poor countries as they get richer, etc. They make all these assumptions and they say that even if you assume some pretty high rates of increased consumption and increased numbers, we're still going to need less and less farmland as we go into the future. As Inder Goklani has calculated, we farm about 38% of the land surface area of the planet at the moment. If we were using the yields of 1960, we'd need to farm 82% of the planet area. Bango the rainforests, bango the swamps, bango the deserts. You know, there would be nothing left for nature if we were doing that. So thank goodness for nitrogen fertilizer, which is what has made this possible. But of course, where does nitrogen fertilizer come from? It comes from the air, but we make it with methane. We use fossil fuels to make it. So if it wasn't for fossil fuels, we'd be in a lot more trouble naturally. So what's going on is land sparing. By improving productivity of agriculture and other industries, and of course it's the same not just for growing fuel, but not growing for food, but for growing fiber and other things too, land gets spared. We reduce the amount of land that we need to feed people. And the consequence of that is we can release land back to nature. And as a consequence, there is net reforestation going on in about half the world at the moment. Basically, the forest transition, the point at which a country stops losing forest and starts gaining forest, comes at about $4,000 per capita GDP. At about that rate, the forest loss tends to stop and forest tends to get replanted. Nobody quite knows exactly how this happens. It's partly political pressure. When people get rich enough, they start minding about things like this and they start demanding that forests be replanted. But it's also just because the productivity of the economy is such that you don't need to put such demands on forest. So, for example, countries like Bangladesh have increasing forest cover at the moment. And Vietnam and the Dominican Republic, countries like this are increasing forest cover. My own country, the UK, has trebled its forest cover since 1900. It's heading back towards the levels it last had at the time of the Doomsday Book in 1086. And of course, in America, it's very obvious that this is happening, particularly on the East Coast. New England used to be 70% farmland. It's now 70% woodland. What about biodiversity and species? I mean, we're said to be in the middle of a great sixth extinction, the great extinction crisis. But actually, when you look at the numbers, The rate of extinction of the animals we know about and can measure is actually quite low at the moment. It has been very high as a result of mankind's activities, particularly in the late 19th and early 20th century. We caused a massive wave of extinction of mammals and birds in particular, but nearly all on islands. All the extinction problems basically were all about killing off endemic species on islands like Hawaii and so on by the releasing of rats and other predators and pests that decimated them. If you leave out islands, and if you count Australia as an island, which it is in ecological terms, then the total number of bird and mammal species that have been driven extinct by human beings since 1500 is 9. It's quite a striking number, that. Hundreds more on islands, but as long as you don't count subspecies, you only count species, so the passenger pigeon and the Carolina parakeet are two of those 9, for example, but the heath hen is not because it's a subspecies, etc. So, in other words, and people say, well, you know, stop trying to make out that there's not a problem here. There is a problem. Humans are destroying habitats. And actually, I think that conservationists should be crying these numbers from the rooftop, saying, look what a good job we're doing. Because an awful lot of these species are not... There's an awful lot of species that would have gone extinct if conservationists hadn't helped them, hadn't gone out and done something about it. Gorillas were down to 200 mountain gorillas about 15, 20 years ago. There's now about 800. So, you know, that's a great success story. There's so many success stories out there that are made possible by the fact that there's economic growth, so people don't need to destroy forests. They can have jobs in cities instead and things like that. I want to end with a couple of anecdotes. One is about the island of Spitsbergen, right near the North Pole, where I spent a summer 30 years ago with some friends in tents. And we were camped next to a little hut called Pluto Hut in the Valley of Rheindahl and on Spitsbergen, a beautiful area. We slept every night in our tents. We put no guards out or anything. We didn't need to worry about polar bears. There were no polar bears on the west coast of Spitsbergen. It was a ridiculous idea that one would even dream of worrying about it then. Last summer, I inquired about renting that hut. I don't like sleeping in tents anymore, but I thought a hut might be all right. For a week with some friends, says, let's go back there. And I was told, no, you can't use that hut anymore. It's been destroyed by the bears. Polar bears are extremely common on the west coast of Spitsbergen now, which they weren't when I was young. It's nothing to do with the fact that the ice has gone, because the west coast of Spitsbergen has never had ice in the summer anyway, hasn't for 500 years. So it's just an increase in numbers. The goose colonies on the offshore islands are now failed to produce a single gosling for the last 5 or 6 years now, because polar bears eat all the chicks, etc. So the polar bear numbers are right up. So are the ringed seal numbers in the fjords. So are the walrus numbers. The fjord we were camped next to didn't have walruses when I was there. Now there are lots of walruses in that fjord. The white whale numbers have trebled in that area. There's been a massive improvement in Arctic wildlife, is my point. It's not greener, because most of these things are brown or whatever, but still, the point is that the wildlife is thriving in the Arctic. It's the same in the Antarctic, when you think about it. Fur seals, king penguins around Antarctica, their numbers have shot up. Why? It's very simple. We've stopped killing them. All these creatures used to be hunted for their fur or for their blubber or something like that. So there was a massive industry exploiting these creatures, which has petered out. And it's petered out partly because of pressure from conservationists, but partly also because the products it produces are no longer needed, because we get them from fossil fuels instead. We don't need whale blubber or walrus blubber. It was the discovery of petroleum that meant that we didn't have to continue hunting whales for whale oil to the same extent. And likewise, we've all got central heating because of fossil fuels, and so we don't need polar bear furs in our houses. So my point is simply that, you know, when you think about the recovery of wildlife in areas where it's doing well, an awful lot of the credit goes to technology and growth and economic development. Rather, some of the credit goes to conservationists. I'm not saying that they're not important, but I am saying that the things that get blamed, the economic development, is actually part of the solution, not part of the problem. The other story I want to mention is the island of Hispaniola, which is divided between two countries, Haiti and the Dominican Republic. On this map, Haiti is green and the Dominican Republic is yellow. That's the wrong way round, actually, because if you were to look at a satellite photograph of those two countries, Haiti is brown, the Dominican Republic is green. The border stands out like a sore thumb on satellite photographs. Why is that? It's because Haiti relies on renewable energy. Haiti fuels not just its domestic economy, but its industrial economy using charcoal. Basically, it's 98% deforested because everybody's using wood for every day for the main fuel for the entire country. The Dominican Republic imports fossil fuels. And it subsidizes propane as a cooking fuel so that people won't go out into the forest and cut down trees to cook over. So in other words, it's the fossil fuels that are sparing the forest in the Dominican Republic. The Dominican Republic forest is increasing. The remarkable thing about fossil fuels, when you think about it, is that when we use them, no other animal is deprived of its livelihood. In other words, we're not pinching them. No other animal wants to eat coal or oil or gas. If you cut down a tree to burn it, you're depriving a woodpecker of its life. Or if you kill a whale, you're depriving a killer whale of its livelihood. A lot of these renewable energy sources are actually, we're competing with wildlife for it. The great thing about fossil fuels is you're not competing with wildlife. Which brings me to bioenergy. At the moment, we're diverting about 5% of the world's grain crop into motor fuel to run cars instead of to feed people. That's saving about 0.6% of the world's oil use. It's cutting our oil use by about 0.6%, which is trivial. It's having very little impact on our use of oil. But it's having an enormous impact on the price of food. As we know, food prices have doubled in the last couple of years. And that's almost entirely because of this diversion of 40% of America's maize crop, for example, into biofuel. And that is driving up hunger, and it's causing starvation, there's no question about it. People are being tipped into malnutrition and even death by this policy. And it's encouraging the destruction of rainforest, because by putting up the price of food, it encourages people to cut down rainforest and plant food instead. It's happening either to plant fuel, like palm oil in Southeast Asia, or to plant food instead. So this policy, and Britain, by the way, is pursuing a policy of trying to encourage the burning of wood to produce electricity. We're setting up wood-fired power stations all over the country. And at the rate we're going, within 5 years, we will have enough wood-burning capacity that is roughly five times the total total amount of wood we can produce in the country. So we'll be importing 80% of it. Quite a lot of it. Some of it's coming from California already. There's wood products being shipped from California to northern England to be burned for green energy. A, it produces more carbon dioxide than coal, particularly if you ship it halfway across the world. B, it's being pinched from woodpeckers in California. I simply don't understand how people think that this is good for the planet. So my argument is simply that the planet surprisingly is getting greener at the moment. It's getting greener because of carbon dioxide, because of climate change, because of the fact that we're needing less land to produce our food. And that greening is actually good news, and it's not happening in spite of what we do in terms of economic development. It's happening because of economic development. Thank you.